coming to get you, Barbara.
I don't know what you come to do, but I come to praise name.
Because you'll never be anything but a common frump whose father lived over a grocery store and whose mother took in washing.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Who Shot Ya? I'm your host, Alonzo Duraldi. Joining me this week, film critic, host of the Switchblade Sisters podcast here on Maximum Fun, April Wolf. April, what's good?
I totally forgot to think of something.
Scramble, scramble, scramble. I've been in that position
wait,
before.
Wait, what happened that was good?
Wow. Any glimmer of non-bleak? We could come back to you.
Maybe this come is, back to me.
Okay.
This is so on brand.
This is like the hardest part well, of the rest podcast of
the,
for
the rest
me.
Of the table can order, and then we'll check back okay, with you, yeah. and maybe you'll pick something
you could do that. Be
off the menu.
Okay.
That lilting laugh is from our dear friend, producer, film festival programmer, Drea Clark.
Hey, Alonzo.
Hello, my darling. Besides your hair, what's good?
Oh, that's right. I let my car blow dry my hair again. So I don't know if you guys remember, a couple years ago, I took a DNA test, and it came back and turned out that I'm 100% that bitch. And so what's good for me is Lizzo's album, which came out this weekend. You didn't know if I was going there, and then you sensed, I could feel him coming along with me. I am an old woman, and I don't listen to a lot of music, and I have listened to this album like 532 times. I love it so much. And the video that she did for 'Cause I Love You, I was like, oh my God, I know where she shot that. I shot scenes from one of my films that I produced at the same location. I was so excited. I was like comparing. I was like, I know those windows. I know that brick backdrop. Anyway, I love it so much. I think Lizzo's such a star. I mean, she's a musical star, and she's talented at everything she does.
Except for maybe talking to critics, I guess.
I was a little disappointed by that. But
she's young.
But
she's
I hear young. You, though. I'm, like, super old and never down with the young people's music. Yeah. And somehow Lizzo has broken through, and yeah. I'm like, I'm old.
Because she's a star. And, like, I love how she pushes herself. I love the messaging that she has, as lame as that is, because I do think it's authentic, and I think there's energy behind her empowerment, and I also think it's a really interesting tweaking of how female fans think of themselves and feel. Like, she does a lot of body positivity, a lot of sex positivity, she's just great. I love what she does. I want to work with her, and I also love her because when she was like 22 or 23 and like kicking it into music, she was like, I'm gonna move to the heart of the music scene, Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Minneapolis.
Yes. And as you guys know, I'm Minnesota. Mm. Ride or die. Nope, I'm not. I haven't lived there in 20 years. But I'm from there, and so I'm very proud of it. And I love Lizzo, and I like to think we're related in some way because she lived in Minnesota at one point, and so did I.
Well, that's,
that counts,
that's,
right?
That's total no, bonding, okay. For sure.
Thanks.
Joining us this week, comedian, head writer for Comedy Central's new show, The New Negroes, Kevin Avery is here. Welcome,
hey.
Kevin.
What'd you call me? I haven't gotten to do that joke yet. What'd you call me? After someone said
oh,
that.
Good, yeah.
I don't know why I'm saving
it's
that
written
for.
It's down here. You people can say it.
Exactly. I thought you were going to say, and I don't know why, this is what I was laughing at when you said that. You said, I took a DNA test, and it came back, and what came into my head was the word negative. That's what I thought
that's
you were going
to actually.
I jumped ahead of you, took a DNA test, came back negative. I don't exist.
I thought you were going to do like The Room, like, and I definitely have breast cancer, like that thing. Like, yeah. I immediately
well,
thought
see,
it was that.
That's why you're the joke writer, because that's a better joke.
I didn't. It wasn't a joke. It literally was where I thought you were going.
It came
and then
back
I was
negative.
Like, then I had to go, oh, yeah, no, that wouldn't happen. And
then, you know. That's like a Rodney Dangerfield kind of took a DNA test to get back negative.
Yeah.
That's like,
oh, it is.
It's a Mitch yeah. Hedberg, yeah. too. Yeah. Just yeah. like a, I took a DNA test. I can't do Mitch Hedberg. But yeah. Anyway,
Kevin,
what's good? Sorry, I interrupted
pitch.
Him.
Thank you for that. Yes. What is good, Kevin?
I'll tell you, as of about an hour ago, I'm going to Comic-Con this year. It's been a while.
Oh.
I'm excited about going. I think I'm going. Right now, my schedule allows it. I've done the thing. I've gotten all the and you know, but you have to go through this whole crazy process to even get a hotel.
Oh, the hotel lottery, the
and
worst.
So I did.
There's a
that.
Lottery for hotels.
Oh yeah, oh, yeah. That's yeah, why yeah, I stopped yeah. going to Comic-Con.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Why would you go?
Okay, you're not going to ruin this for me.
No. I'm sorry.
Don't spoil it for Kevin.
Just go. That's why. Okay. That's why you go. You just go.
Okay.
So, but it's ridiculous. And so I did the thing. You pick like, I think you can pick up to 12 hotels. And I picked 8.
Half of them are in Tijuana.
Yeah. And I picked 8. And then they got back to me. They get back to you like a week and a half later. And they got back to me and said, sorry, it was too late. All the hotels were booked up. You're on a wait list. So I'm like, all right, well, that's it. It's just interesting to have the ticket for the event, but not the means to be able to attend the event.
That's so
Kevin,
weird.
You have a show on Comedy Central.
No, I know.
I think you
how
know.
How do you think you, I got the ticket?
You know somebody who knows somebody.
So, well, here's the thing. So that exactly.
So his what?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So little frowny face for about 5 minutes, and then boop, email pops up. Hey, friend of mine has an extra room. She doesn't need it. It's all yours if you want it for the week.
What? Ooh, that is a what's good.
Boom. Nice
hotel, all taken care of.
See, that's the universe rewarding you, because I would have spent those 5 minutes sending a lot of emails like, excuse me, do you? What kind of convoluted system is this that you're having?
How dare you?
I like to, as they used to say in Star Trek, hold my position. Just ride it out and see. If you just wait, you know, I call it the tennis ball. Effect. You know what I mean? I talk about this with dating a lot, but like if you are standing in the center of a court and there's one of those machines at the opposite end and someone says, I want you to grab the ball. Just grab one ball and it fires a ball at you, and then you run right and you try to grab, you're going to miss it. And that was left actually. And then you run and then you know, it fires another one, you run right. And then you're running around the court trying to grab ball and you're missing them. And if you just stayed in the same place, eventually one would come right at you and you just grab that shit.
It's also the same rule if you get lost in the wilderness, you guys.
Very true.
There you go. Tennis ball when you're in the wilderness.
It's getting very heavy in here.
Yeah.
April, you got a good thing?
I was going through my list. I was like, did I talk about socks already? And I'm like, yes,
yeah,
I talked about socks.
Check.
Okay, so Lao Gan Ma sauce, did I talk about that?
No. What? Tell me more. Tell me everything.
Lao Gan Ma is my favorite additive for food that I got from, it used to be the Super A warehouse or something. It's a grocery store, Asian grocer. And now I can find it at H Mart in Alhambra. And I love it. It's my favorite thing. It is the tastiest thing. You'll want to like eat it with a spoon, but it's so good. I put it on everything. It's spicy and has so much flavor in it, and it will change your life. And I didn't realize, like, one of my friends took me to the H Mart because I was just like, I can't find an Asian grocer. They keep closing all of my favorite ones because of gentrification, blah, blah, blah. So she took me all the way out there to get it, and I got like 4 giant fucking things.
Say, go to San Gabriel. All the Asian grocery stores are thriving in San Gabriel.
It's one of those things where I didn't know, like, as a white person, I was just like, here's this tasty thing I came across. And my friend is just like, oh, yeah, we eat that. And I was like, oh. She's like, no, there's, like, lots of articles about this. Like, this is a thing, and you should know. And I was like, oh, okay, so Lao Gan Ma.
Alonzo, what's good?
Oh, thank you
for
asking,
Drea. That was such a polite ass,
dude. I was like, I looked around on both sides. I've definitely stepped on people for that.
How kind of you. Well, actually, appropriately, this is a Drea-related thing. You talked about Libby, the app that you put your library card number in, and it gives you access to. You can, like, hold actual books. You can get books, audiobooks. I went and renewed my library card because I found out that's a thing you have to do in Los Angeles every 3 years.
Yeah,
you have to renew your card.
It's super weird.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, yeah, I have to renew mine.
I expired. I had no idea. So I got my new card, immediately got on Libby, and got Parker Posey's memoir, the audiobook of You Were on an Airplane, and it's so much fun.
And she reads it?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, no, it's read by Selma Blair. Of course
okay,
she reads
how
it.
That would be pretty
you.
Crazy, though.
Actually, that would be pretty
that,
cool.
That actually, that. Yeah, that would that scans. But no, Parker Posey reads her own memoir, and it is just fun and weird, and like there's a whole chapter where she does a lot of yoga breathing, but also like very dishy and entertaining and eccentric and just what you would want Parker Posey's memoir to be. So anyway, get your library card up to speed, people, and check out Libby. It will open up new worlds for you.
I want to read that. Yeah.
Yay.
So today on the show, we are going into outer space with Robert Pattinson and Juliette Binoche and Madame Claire Denis for High Life. We have a new question from the Who's Shot Line and, of course, staff picks. But first, as always, it a dick, where we ask, is this important? Do I care? We'll each read a news headline and answer those two vital questions.
Okay, I have something from the Midwest. I'm really leaning into the Midwest thing. You guys,
it's all right.
Haven't lived there for 20
years.
You
could put that corn down.
Steve Ropel from Rothschild, Wisconsin. I can't keep doing that. Sorry, I lost it. He's a Scani, though. He's broken the world record for how many times someone has seen a movie in the theaters. Because, kids, he saw Captain Marvel 116 times in the theaters. You'll remember this is a recent release. These were a lot of views in a short amount of time.
It's only been up for about 6 weeks.
Yes. The previous record was 104 times. And here's a quote from this brilliant Wisconsinite.
So I'm trying to think, if anyone wanted to break this, I really don't want to re-break it, because this has been, it's been pretty tough. There's been a, it's a finite amount of time, but I don't think I'm going to try this one again.
I think one last note to keep in mind while you ponder if this is important, the most he saw it one day was 7 times. Is this important, and do you care?
Okay,
I care. I hope that he has someone who loves him somewhere.
I hope he has a hemorrhoid pillow. But I mean, but Marvel movies are long. Like, wouldn't you pick a 75-minute cartoon or something?
It's a full 2 hours,
yes.
Man.
Yeah.
Well, how much did he love Captain? First of all, I want to know what movie was seen 104 times.
That's true. I don't know.
Yeah, we don't know.
That's what I'm.
We'll have to call Guinness. It's the only way you can
Very
find
bad
out.
Things.
No, oh, I no. wonder why. Do you think he just loved Captain Marvel?
He bet he doesn't anymore.
I bet he's starting a podcast about it, though.
Oh, the worst idea of all time has been taken, so.
He had to take time off work. He took long lunch
off
breaks
work.
To accommodate watching an entire movie during his lunch break. And then because it's through Guinness, he had to have pictures taken in front of the movie poster, 2 written witness statements saying he was actually there. And he put all this work into it. And I think they asked him if he would do it again. He was like, no. And then the day when he watched it, because there's definitely films that I've seen a bunch. My goddaughter came and visited me a few years ago, and I'd planned all this stuff. We went up to the Griffith Observatory. We went all up, like, all this stuff. And, like, day 3 of that, she was like, can we not do anything today? And I'm like, what? I have, like, a laminated itinerary. She just wanted me to, like, build a nest for her in my living room. And then we 100% watched the motion picture Pitch Perfect probably 8 times in the next 3 days.
Oh.
And just kept watching it. I loved that movie once. But I get watching a movie numerous times. But I think of even that. Like, think of a time you've seen a movie twice in a week and that you loved. This is insane.
Well, wow. To take time off of work, what's the point? What is the point?
Because he's never going to have the longest fingernails. How else is he going to get in Guinness? That's
What's
the only
the
other way
point?
In, you guys.
Go drink some Guinness. What? What?
People want to be listed in a thing sometimes.
Yes. This man from Rothschild, Wisconsin is now being talked about in our weird little sounding cubicle, so I maybe mission accomplished.
I hope he got at least, like, you know, a signed photograph of Brie Larson or something.
Oh my gosh,
like,
right?
He deserves some kind of souvenir for all this. Like, Kevin Feige should travel to Wisconsin and shake his hand. I don't know. Something.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think he gets to go to the Endgame?
He's on a list now.
Yeah, exactly.
He's on a list away from Brie Larson. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Oh, God, one more, please.
Okay. This past Thursday at the Fast Company Impact Council, Abigail Disney, the granddaughter of Roy Disney, called the $65 million salary of Disney CEO Bob Iger, quote, insane. She went on to say that his salary is just a part of a bigger problem in society, and paying CEOs this much has a corrosive effect on society. She is not wrong. Fast Company points out that Iger's salary is 1,424 times the median salary at Disney. Abigail Disney says that although Disney pays above minimum wage, quote, we all know the federal minimum wage is too low to live on. So why must we, at a company that's more profitable than it's ever been, be paying anything so close to least the law allows at all? Is this important? How much do you care?
So much.
Oh my God, so much.
I feel like I wish we were British Parliament right now and we'd all just be pounding on the table. Yes. She has so many great points in this, and she's made these before. I'm a huge fan of hers. She's so forthright about what that level of wealth is and explaining it to people, too, because there's so many people you don't understand. I never understand. I'm like, why do you not agree with economic policies that would benefit you? Why do you actually think bosses deserve that? They don't deserve that. No. You deserve more. But one of the other angles she took in this that I appreciated was looking at the minimum wage and looking at the, if you're paying people who are in service positions like janitors or just that kind of industry that's, service.
Like,
yeah, service industries.
All the people that positions. Work at Disneyland that
right,
have to deal
like
with,
keeping,
you know,
everything clean.
Yeah.
If those are people that you think of as so low skill, but it's also work you're entirely unwilling to do yourself.
Of course.
So you have to pay people to do it. There will always need to be people cleaning Disney World. And yet, so what you're like, oh, these people, if they only got an education, if they only bettered themselves and worked up, like, no, you're still going to need people to do those jobs. Like, what are we doing? And so her putting it on a societal level is so meaningful.
Yeah, it's, this is in a lot of industries where CEOs make like 1,000 times or more what the median of their employees. And it's just, it's nauseating. This is capitalism becoming feudalism, you know, and we're all turning into the serf class, and it's, you know, it's ludicrous. And I'm glad that she, as a rich person with a famous last name and a platform, is talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but the thing is,
yes, feed the rich. Is that where you're going?
Look, we need our rich, you guys.
How is your yacht publishing business doing?
The only thing about this is that I don't. Yeah, no shit, I guess is what I'm saying. Like, I don't. What? Yeah. Who? I just. I know. I guess what I want to tell her is I know. We all know, and I don't see. She's not wrong. I agree. I want to make it clear. I agree with her. But yeah, that's the thing. And so this doesn't jump out at me like, wait, what? This is happening? Also, I mean, then what about actors and directors? You know what I'm saying? Like, there are a whole lot of people that make millions of dollars. I don't know what we decide. How do we decide who is worth that money and who is not? And
a bunch of lobbyists and then they buy a bunch of congressmen.
I have no love for CEOs and you know, the corporate sort of universe, but we're all living in it. And we're all fans of some of these folks who make millions of dollars, you know, against the not millions of dollars that a lot of the rest of us make. So to me, it's a question of, all right, well, who should be making what, or what's worth it?
Well, the salient thing is that no big company that makes that much money should be paying people minimum wage.
Yeah.
That's the same.
Yeah.
Like the one thing I think is easy to grasp is like, that's wrong, and that you shouldn't be paying the least that you can pay because that's fucked up.
It is. To me, it's about distribution. I don't care if this guy makes $65 million, but then everybody else better make
it's not about the amount he's taking. No, it's about the proportion of him versus what his lowest paid employees
are. And also versus, like, it's one of those things where I don't even think that his salary would even feel like a problem if they were paying more taxes and if it was going into the actual social safety net and that all of his workers were actually taken care of with good health care. I just don't think that would be a problem. We'd be like, well, I don't know. I guess I don't really care because I've got what I need.
Yeah.
But we don't have what we
need.
But
college is free because of Bob Iger's taxes. Yeah, if we were saying that, it would be a whole different
game. Yeah, we'd be like, thanks, Bob Iger.
Yeah.
Appreciate it. More Marvel movies. Keep pumping those fuckers out.
Good old Bob. He saved us all.
You're listening to the Smash the State cast. No. We'll be back to talk about High Life after this word from another show on Maximum Fun.
If you like MaximumFun.org podcast, chances are you are an enthusiastic consumer of good media.
Which is why we're here to tell you about the Outlier Show on MaximumFun.org. The one that just doesn't fit.
The Greatest Generation is a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast, and that MaximumFun.org is probably a little bit embarrassed to call one of its shows.
And that, more than anything, should inspire you to subscribe and download The Greatest Generation. What is this thing?
Why is it here?
Who listens?
All of these answers can be found if you subscribe to The Greatest Generation using your podcatcher or by going to MaximumFun.org.
Welcome back to Who Shot Ya? I'm your host, Alonzo Duraldi. Joining me in the studio are...
April Wolf.
Drea Clark.
Hi, I'm Kevin Avery.
Hi, Kevin Avery.
You caught me by surprise.
You're the guest, so you get to describe to us what's High Life about.
Yeah.
Don't you mean, what the hell was that? Let me describe High Life for you. It's very dark. I walked into the theater. Had to get my bearings. We are in space. I was getting sleepy. At some point, I left to get popcorn about 20 to 30 minutes in. Came back. Oh, no one was at the register, by the way. I went there the one time they were stocking up, and so it took extra long. I came back, and I'm not sure what was going on for the rest of the movie. And here's the thing: I wasn't gone that long, and the whole time I was like, I wonder if I had stayed here, if I would still be like, what's happening here?
Oh yeah.
Now we'll never know.
Okay, so here's the thing. So we begin with Robert Pattinson and his baby. Mm-hmm. The baby's in the movie a lot in that first. You know how when you go to a coffee shop and someone's brought a baby, and you're like, "Why are you bringing a baby to a coffee shop? It's 7:30 in the morning. This is when I go to get my chill on and read." But you can put your headphones on to enjoy the coffee shop. Well, you can't do that. In the baby's there. The baby's riding with you the whole time.
I think we should say that the baby screams a lot in the
beginning.
Did
anyone else have a Sweet Home Alabama? You have a baby in a bar.
Yeah.
That was my reaction.
A little bit.
I was just thinking, like, how good an actor is this baby? Because, like, kids are a big pain in the ass in movies. And this I was getting it all from the baby.
Yes.
There was so much performance happening.
The baby was rough. The baby was frustrated.
Baby, CGI, definitely.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
The baby was real? The baby got her own title card in the closing credits. Wow. I was impressed.
Well, whoever did the sound on that should win an Oscar because the baby was piercing. but so, yeah, it begins with he's alone on the ship with the baby. And then we kind of jump back. We sort of jump back and we see a little bit of how he got there, how he ended up in prison, but we don't really know that's the story yet. And then we see he's in prison with a bunch of people, and they come upon a black hole. And does anyone know why they were
sent to see if they could harness the energy of a black hole
and send that information back?
Right.
Yeah.
But the thing is that they're so far away from Earth that they never hear back from their messages, so they have no idea of knowing if anybody's still on Earth or if they're really part of an experiment or they're just being dumped out into space because they're jail people. It's all a mystery.
They're jail folk.
That's what they call prisoners in the future.
Yes.
Jail people. There's also the side experiments going on Ms.
Juliette Binoche. Who is also a prisoner, but she's just doing these experiments because she's got the white coat.
She's got a degree, I guess.
She is incredible in this.
Yeah.
I really liked how Claire used her. This movie was so much grosser than I was expecting.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen a handful. I've seen, like, Bastards.
I saw White Material.
White Material I loved.
Yeah.
I've seen a few of her films. And this was so much grosser than I was expecting.
Oh, but I mean, God, what's the body horror one?
Trouble
Every Day.
Oh, right.
Like, that one's like,
one.
awesome. Yeah. So good. I mean, just like cutting pieces of your body off. Like, I love it.
That is very April Wolf.
She's describing terrifying. Gusto here. Well, this movie gives you the through the miracle of the dissolve, we get to equate semen and breast milk. Which, it's the circle of life.
What?
Well, that's the thing is on a filmmaking level, there's so much to appreciate. So in the times when I was I still was taking something in visually.
That fucking, like, masturbation
score.
Scene.
Oh, the whole fuck box.
So,
like,
the fuck box is so scary.
Okay, like, whoa. What was that? Why was there fuck box? First of all, who installed that?
First off.
Boeing?
I don't understand why Northrop Grumman. Any rocket ship going into space should have a fuck box. Like, that seems a natural build for me. I do want to give it up to the cast because, Andre Benjamin was in this, and I was not expecting that. And he's like obsessed with this garden, and I love seeing him pop up on screen. Robert Pattinson is such a good actor, His choices since Twilight and Kristen Stewart's choices
make
me understand why they were together for so long when she was gay. Like,
before she was gay.
Whatever.
I mean, she was gay.
Like, whatever.
Well, okay, fine. But before she,
she was living her gayest life.
Thank you.
But I'm like, oh, I see the people here. Because he did, what was the, Cosmopolis.
Yes, Cosmopolis. Lost City of Z. Like,
Lost City of Z, I hated that movie, and he is so good in
agreed.
It.
Agreed, yes.
And his performance in Good Time is like,
oh
I
my
just,
God.
I don't even like that movie, but I think he's really amazing.
He's so talented. He does so much with so little.
Yeah, both of them are picking really interesting shit, and they're working with the Claire Denise and the Robert the David Cronenbergs of the world, the Olivier Assayases, and they're doing fascinating work. And so he is always feels like a revelation to me. Like, even knowing that he's a really good actor, I feel like I'm seeing him do different stuff in all these movies that are giving him things to do.
Yeah, well, he's kind of it's a surprise. Because I like talking about star trajectory, because I find people's choices once they hit a certain level of fame fascinating.
Mm. Yeah.
And both of them, but especially that there's something like he's got all the money he ever needs, right? So the idea of loving acting so much to seek out artists like Claire Denis, and he doesn't just seek out and find, but like he has been on the road with this film for however long. He was on the road with Good Times. He did every interview. Anyway, I love both his on-screen performance and what he's trying to accomplish as an actor. I know I sound real Team Edward right now.
No. You know what? To what you're saying, though, and I know I'm kind of being silly with, I really was struggling to figure out what was going on, but I also was aware that I was missing something and I wasn't 100% present. But the... Everyone's
did you go to the popcorn when all the bodies got ejected into space? Maybe was that a thing?
No. I went just as he was like, something was happening. I was like, oh, now's the chance. But by the time I walked, it was the Vista. So by the time I walked all the way back up to the thing, something else was happening. I think he was strapping people in, and I was watching. And then I was like, I got to get this popcorn, or I'm going to fall asleep. I hadn't had a nap. I hadn't had a lot of sleep. But everyone's performance, I thought, was really interesting, and the movie was fascinating to watch. And so it certainly wasn't a movie, even not knowing everything that was going on constantly, I found myself really trying to piece it together. And that's, to me, that's an interesting film. That's a sign of a strong, film, even if I wasn't like grasping on right away, like, oh, I see what happened. You know,
there's also something so interesting about what Claire Denis at this stage in her career is deciding to do. This is her first English language film, right?
Entirely in English.
And this is right after Let the Sunshine In, which is just like a rompy
comedy. Yeah, like Julie Binoche is like a free-spirited middle-aged lady with a lot of lovers.
Yeah. You know? So she finally has sort of this clout, this funding. She has this big, like, Robert Pattinson plays in international markets that a lot of blander white American dudes do not.
Sure.
And so she has this whole package together, and then she's like, great. Let me introduce you to the idea of the fuck box. Do you know what I mean? Like, I have all the tools I've ever wanted. What shall I do with them?
Oh my God, that dog scene.
Oh, that was rough. That might have been my favorite.
No pun intended.
I'm sorry, America.
I thought you meant it. I'm sorry.
No, I did not. That
had a DNA test to get back there.
That was hard to watch, but it was also, I think, my favorite sequence when that whole thing with what's on this ship. I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah,
you know,
there's so much dread. The thing that I realized, I saw it at the arc light, came out, it was very bright outside, and then realized that I had a hard time walking downstairs, and I was just like, oh, I think I feel fucked up right now. And I almost felt like I was on drugs or I had gone into like a different existence for 2 hours, and that's enough for me to be like, okay, something's happening with this movie, and it's affected me on a profound level where I don't feel comfortable walking downstairs. So.
Yeah. It's a brutal movie. I mean, the dog thing is, that to me was a frightening sequence, just because I didn't know what was in there, and it was just scary the way it was shot. I really enjoyed it.
This movie feels like it's sort of part of this continuum of like grim, you know, art sci-fi, like Solaris, both versions, I guess, Silent Running, even like John Carpenter's Dark Star in a way, you know, just this kind of like industrial, ugly, fluorescent.
I like that, though.
Yeah, I mean, but 2001 at least, it's...
There's humor.
2001 has humor, but 2001 also, like, its version of outer space travel is at least just sort of like, you know, suffocatingly bland. But this is like ugly and industrial, and, you know, like the lighting makes everybody look pasty, and, you know, we have to consider what black water is, and I kept thinking about those other movies while I was watching this. And I both like those movies and feel like I'm being tortured while watching.
But it's like
movies.
Alien. That's what it took
say.
Me back.
Alien. It's like
totally,
the logical continuum of Alien, where that's like the
Alien
least
with no
shame
monsters.
Of anything.
The threat, except for Juliette Binoche, but you know.
Yeah, she's the. I mean, she even says she's like, I look like a witch, and she's like, yeah, you are the monster of this whole thing. Like,
yeah, I said before, she's like, if Darth Vader had hair down to his asshole, it would be Juliette Binoche. Has there been a movie about space travel that makes it look appealing?
No.
So I have a friend who there was something with like Mars,
Flash
like
Gordon.
Probably Elon Musk. Not right. Barbarella.
Sure.
There was like someone was buying, or maybe it was the NSYNC guy, but someone was going to buy their way into
Lance
the stratosphere.
Yeah.
Right? Because wasn't he like trying to, anyway?
He wanted to be an astronaut.
Yeah. And she said, oh, I would do that in a heartbeat. I would go to Mars tomorrow. And I was like, there's literally not a numerical monetary amount that exists for me to do that.
No.
Why would you go to Mars?
Why would I go anywhere?
You can't settle it.
You can't. Yes. I saw Apollo 11 recently on the big
movie.
Screen, which I loved, and I was so taken in, and obviously I already knew how that one ended, and yet I was still, and even just watching that, I'm like, oh, those guys were only gone for 8 days. I do not care. The minute that they get far enough away and the Earth is this, what a beautiful marble, like, fuck that, bring me back to that marble.
Yeah.
Like,
it's just that I always, you know, when I was a kid, imagined how cool it would be to go into space. But as you get older, you realize, especially after, like, having watched Apollo 13, one tiny thing.
You're right.
And that's the whole... That's
everything.
You
can't. I don't even want to like.
Week.
I wouldn't even want to cross the ocean. You know.
Yeah.
Like I would not want to be on a cruise ship that got too far from the shore.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm a strong swimmer, so I feel safer in that.
Have you seen open water?
I was just going to ask that question.
That's why I won't scuba dive. I'll tell you what. Because I would absolutely be the bitch. They were like, oh, we miscounted. Sorry. Jeez. She kept talking about how she was a strong swimmer.
What a depressing.
The agoraphobia podcast now.
Wow.
All right. In the grand summation of things, High Life. Do we screen it, stream it, or skip it? Drea.
Damn it. You knew you were going to make me go first. I'm not going to say screen it. I am veering towards stream it because I think that it's gross and disgusting and you should know that. But I think that there's filmmaking here that's really interesting. It's an artist, a directorial artist that I think should be supported and encouraged to make weird exploratory stuff. And I think that there's a lot to take away from this movie. I would not recommend shoving your mouth full of popcorn. Apparently,
don't do that.
Do it,
maybe not.
That's the second time that's happened to me.
I would say screen it. No, stream it with no popcorn.
Fair enough. Mm. Kevin?
Well, I would say, for those same reasons, I would say screen it.
Oh.
Ooh.
Because I would go back and watch it again. But it's a fascinating movie. It's visually really kind of cool. And I can see how you can get really sucked into this movie. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I want to see more of that out there even. It ain't going to be for everybody.
No.
That's for sure. No. And there were times when I was like, well, what are we all doing here? But I did enjoy. I'm glad that I went and saw that in the
cool
the theater.
April?
I thought I was hating it while I was watching it. I was like, how much longer is this going to last? And I wanted to check my phone because I was the only person in the theater anyway, so it really wouldn't have mattered. But then the longer that I sat with it, and then I've had a few hours to just think about it, I'm like, oh, fuck, I think I love it.
And when you tried to walk downstairs.
It's the same shit that I had with Vox Lux, where I was just like, do I fucking hate this? No. Like, yeah, I say screen it.
All right. You know what? I also say screen it.
Really?
Yeah. It was a thoroughly unpleasant experience.
Oh,
but
yeah.
That's what she wanted it to be.
Yes.
She made exactly the movie that she wanted.
Yes.
And I responded to it the way I think she wanted me to. Yeah. I think it is. If you go in knowing that it's going to be an unpleasant experience, it needs to be an immersive unpleasant experience. And so I think you really want to have that cinematic experience and let it wash over you with all of its black water,
yeah,
you know, and
water.
Take it all in. Yikes.
Prison sentence in itself.
Oh, man. All right. We'll be back with more Who Shot Ya after this word from another Maximum Fun show.
Hello, I'm Oliver Wong, DJ, scholar, and journalist.
And I'm Morgan Rhodes, music supervisor and stiletto devotee. And we host Heat Rocks, a podcast where we invite our favorite musicians, writers, and scholars to talk about the albums that have changed their lives.
Morgan, what exactly is a heat rock?
It's a record that's like hot fire, combustible.
Basically, just a really, really good album.
We've taken a deep dive into Nigerian funk from the 70s.
He kind of had like a bad reputation in town as just being like a sketchy dude. And he was just making music that for thousands of miles around him, he was the only person doing anything like that.
1980s teen comedy soundtracks.
This soundtrack always felt the same to me as like when I would find a great blazer at a thrift store that I could, and I was like, oh, this is going to be me now.
We've talked about Prince, Boys to Men, Kendrick Lamar, and everything in between. Heat Rocks, every Thursday here on Maximum Fun.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to Who Shot Ya? I'm your host, Alonzo Duraldi. Joining me in the studio are
Kevin Avery,
Drea Clark,
April Wolf.
We have another call from the Who Shot line. We love it when y'all call us with questions and comments. And today's question comes from Eve in Alameda, California.
Hi, y'all. My name is Eve. I'm calling from Alameda, California. I have an odd question that I'm just curious your opinion on. I am a millennial woman, and every time I go on a date with a guy and the topic of favorite movies comes up, almost invariably they name Children of Men or Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Nothing against those movies, but I've just heard it said a lot. And I was just curious to hear your opinion on why you think millennial men name those movies so often, at least my experience. And then as an extension, what you think some stereotypical movies for a millennial woman or other generations would be. Just curious to hear your opinion, and love the show. Thanks.
I would like to know how large the sample group is here.
I love this question so much because you could do such a deep analysis, and I do, of people giving their taste, right? Like, oh, I like this. And especially in a dating capacity, is so much more about like, what do I want this person to think about me because of said taste?
Yep.
And so dudes putting Children of Men and Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind are like, listen, I think motherhood is amazing. I think true love is the answer.
So you think they're lying? They really would have wanted to say Freddie got fingered or something, would they?
They are trying to sound smart. That is definitely the intellectual answer. I'm using air quotes.
They are sort of art house adjacent, I guess.
They're good movies.
Yeah, yes. No. No shade on either
one. They're good movies, but they're definitely, I have superior taste in film.
Film. I mean, I'm an Xer, and I feel like Gen X guys who want to sound smart will often say like Heat.
Oh, my
which one?
Heat. Michael Mann's Heat. That seems to be like.
Yes.
A
if Ricky
go-to.
Were here, he'd be like,
"How dare
heat.
You?"
Yes.
I know.
And the air horn. Is that
feel very seen?
But that's. I don't even think that's the smart choice. It's a great movie. It's a brilliant movie. But I think that's the dude's choice. You know
you're
what I'm
right.
saying?
That is.
It's like guys who say Braveheart.
I hear it a lot, but it is. You're right. It is more of a testosterone thing. I used to think when it sounds smart, they would say like.
What is like.
I'm someone
like something with like Altman or
I heard The Godfather so many times.
Ooh,
like,
I think that's legitimately
or like Reservoir Dogs again. Yeah. Well-made movies, but I'm like, oh, Reservoir Dogs. Yes, I see. You see yourself walking in slow motion.
I want one of them to
but
say
they
like
weren't lying.
They weren't. No. But I don't. Yeah, you're right. Maybe it wasn't as like conniving. Yeah.
Nobody comes up with Reservoir Dogs as a way to sound foofier than they are.
Now, if they say like my brilliant career, I think that they're probably lying.
I love that movie.
It's amazing, but I don't think that they're going to say it.
Although, I would be so excited.
Doesn't that feel like a deep enough cut that they really would mean that?
They could.
That's true.
Your average guy who's going to try to make himself sound smart does not know what that even is.
Yeah.
You know what? I think straight up dude is going to be The Godfather. Straight up dude who wants to sound smarter will say The Conversation.
Oh, yeah.
I've been seeing a lot of Eyes Wide Shut kind of dude love too, though.
Jesus Christ.
Now, you guys are actually millennials, so like what's your take here? Like what do the millennial ladies what's going to be their go-to choice?
So I had some like immediate female ones that came to mind of what I would put out. If someone was coming at me with Children of Men and Eternal Sunshine, and I was like, I see what you're doing there. Let me just send back a little.
But have you seen?
No, but not even the have you seen, but I'm like, Kill Bill, because I want you to know I have a list, and I will check off every name on that list. And then, but the artier, like the response that I find, the equivocation of Eternal Sunshine, the equivalence, thank you, is Lost in Translation. Be like, oh, it's artful. It's about a woman's journey. Huh. It's you know, there's something about loneliness there, but like not desperate loneliness.
Yeah.
Poetic loneliness.
Alienation.
If they were honest, they'd be like, Troop Beverly Hills. And we'd be like, yes.
Like, Beverly Hills, what a thrill. Oh, yeah.
Hocus pocus.
Very, very honest, you know?
Does nobody say Synecdoche, New York? Is that just me?
Oh, boy.
Is that how you lured in Dave White?
Yes, totally. No, he was already ensnared by the time that movie came out.
Again, that feels like an honest answer. Well, you really got to love it to say.
I mean,
what
Eternal
do you
Sunshine
think?
Is also
say?
Charlie Kaufman, so I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what.
Lay some patter on us. What?
I like millennial women. I don't know what the movies are that I'm trying to.
If you were on a date,
I'm on a date
and trying to sound like, you know.
Yeah. You've caught the tennis ball.
Cultured, but also you've caught the tennis ball, exactly. Cultured, but sensitive. What's your go-to?
Here's the thing, guys. I don't play that shit.
I don't know how heterosexuality works. I have to ask these questions.
I'm going to lean into the movie that makes me sense. Just knocked over the... We're just knocking over furniture in here. But I would probably lean into something that I just really... Even if it wasn't uniquely me, like if someone asked me my favorite movie, I'm going to say Star Wars, and I'm just going to deal with it on the spot right there on the. I'm going to throw out a few, but I'm not going to try to find the intellectual choice because I'm just going to be like, oh, this is just what I like. What are we going to?
Because they're going to find out at some point.
Yeah.
They're going to be like, oh, should we sit down and watch some Children of Men?
Here's the thing.
Put on A New Hope.
Yeah, and also on a date, that is what they think of my movie choices. That's the least of my worries. There's so many other things that we're trying to navigate here. The movies, I got that. We could die all day. I should hope we stay on movies all night long. You know what I mean? There's so much other shit to navigate.
I guess, do you think that she's talking about like what you would have on your profile if you had to put, like, because I do
it's
think
on a lot of people's
it's
profile.
So
like, you know, coffee date chit chat either way.
Yeah. You're right. Yeah. You're right.
Now, I think most movies are okay if they say a human centipede. I think
run
like that's like there should be just like a few movies that you should always run from, and then.
Two very dear friends of mine who are now married and parents, their first date, they went to see Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer.
Oh, wow. That's a bold choice. Yeah. And I bet they didn't regret it.
Nope, not at
all. It's a good movie.
They've been together ever since. Now, and also we're throwing the term around millennial as though it had some sort of blanket thing. Is there, and not to put you on the spot to be like the spokesperson for, you know, everybody, but like, is there a black millennial choice? Like, do you bring up Love and Basketball or something?
Oh,
like,
my God, I
really,
love that
movie.
Have
you been paying attention or no?
What the hell you just call me? No. hey, that's a callback, guys.
That was good. You did that twice.
Nice. We got it one more before the show's over because it's the three rule.
How,
you know.
How sad is it that before you finish, I thought of it and it made me laugh?
You amuse you.
I am so sorry, everybody. I think there are, and these are movies that I have not, like, there are a bunch of movies that people throw out that I'm like, never see. Love and Basketball, never saw it.
Love Jones.
Never seen it. The fact that I can't remember them and you have to name them for me should tell you something.
I'm still reading guest of the show, Brian Raftery's book about 1999. And I just read the chapter that's all about The Wood. And
The Wood was
man.
The other one I was going to say. The only reason I remember The Wood is because my friend was in it and we did theater together. Mm. And I was like, hey, he got the, okay, good for him. You know, like that was, but otherwise, yeah, I missed a lot of that.
Fair enough.
I just because I wasn't
watching Star Wars. You were just
I was watching Star Wars. I mean, you know,
it's 2 hours long. Really,
I was watching Star Wars 116 times.
Hello, Guinness.
15, and that guy beat my record. Yeah. So, but there are those.
Mm.
But there are movies that you say you haven't seen them. They pull your black card. I'm counting on no black people listening to this right now. I hope they've all gone to the bathroom or something right now.
We should put a warning because...
I mean, like, is there the black people don't listen warning that y'all have?
Our lack of melanin as a collective has lulled you into a safe space.
Okay.
I do think and hope there is not just such a whitewashing with people listening. But I'm sure you'll hear about it now that we're going to get this hard.
Black people rise up! Where yet? That was your call!
I mean,
was it my secret?
Lord.
It was good. I didn't even hear it.
That was my secret challenge. I bet there are no black people listening. You know what that means, black folks. Make yourself known.
Make those emails happen.
Yeah.
No, I haven't gay dated in a long time, but I think that, like, for gay guys...
Can't you just say gated?
I have not gated.
Why would you do
I have not been in a gated community in a while. But, you know, I think that, you know, sadly, unless you're dealing with, like, very smart, very, you know, kind of... you know, coastal liberal elite types, there might be some sort of smarty pants movies you would need to cite. But more likely, it is True Beverly Hills or something along those lines that is going to be the conversation starter.
I probably don't have the same movie taste because obviously you guys know how much I love Starship Troopers and Motel Hell. So it's not going to be like
Starship
the
Troopers
same...
is great. What are you talking about?
Yeah, but that's not going to be like millennial women all say Starship Troopers is number one. You know, like it's not going to be...
You are a weirdo. There is that, yes.
Training Day might be one. I think that's a generation because it's Denzel.
Sure.
That might, but yeah.
And it also, the Macy Gray.
Yes.
Oh my
God.
I never miss a Macy Gray movie.
That's right.
What?
None of us do.
Eve, I hope this answers your question.
Alameda, I love it. I used to go to a Mexican restaurant right over there, right over the bridge.
What's up, Alameda Bay Area?
Look at you with all the non-white lady foods. You're just a world explorer. Yeah.
White lady foods are not that tasty.
With your pepper sauces and your Mexican restaurants in Alameda.
Like,
we're
just going to have like casserole? Fish and chips, casserole.
Just a hot dish.
With the fried onions on top.
Oh, yeah.
It's so good.
There you go.
Some green beans.
You too can call the Who Shot Line with questions like this. We're at WSY-803-1664. Be like Eve. Keep it under a minute. It very much increases your chances of getting on the show. Staff picks time. What do we got? April.
Okay, I'm on an Osploitation kick right Ooh. Now. So I watched A Long Weekend, and I just fucking love it. It's like nature against human, and it is essentially, it's from 74. Someone will correct me. It's one of the first, you know, nice Aussie movies that is outside of kind of like a very small bit of respectable film that they had. But I think it still kind of crosses the bridge into respectable film, even though it's a little bit exploitation. So it's about this couple, they're fighting, and they go on this vacation to the coast. And when they're there, like, there's all these clues that, like, they're hurting nature and that nature might be hurting back. Mm. And it's, like, a really kind of long, slow burn. But then things really get nuts because nature is pissed. And it is so dark and weird. But, yeah, the villain is nature, and you're rooting for nature to win because these people are just, like... They're ruining everything. Like, they're just putting out a bad vibe. They're running over kangaroos. They're just like
what?
Shooting guns because that's. But it's a really wonderful. I have listeners who listened to the episode where I made everyone watch Wake and Fright.
Yes.
Here is a double feature for you because it is so wonderful, those two movies together, because it's a criticism of, you know, what Aussie culture was like, and, you know, it's kind of like brutalness, and it's
more dead kangaroos.
Yeah, there's
is it also about nature, Wake and Fright, or is it just completely different?
It's
about a lot of things, but they kill kangaroos in it.
Is there a fuck box? Is there a fuck
there
box?
There is no fuck. Wait.
Kind of.
Whoa.
Let me think about
no,
that.
No, not really.
No. But right. Everyone's drunk fucking all the time, and Donald Pleasance is amazing. That's Wake and Fright.
So the world is their fuck box.
Yes. Exactly. But yeah. Long Weekend. You guys got
Long
it. And it's
weekend.
On Amazon Prime right now, actually. Okay. So
you should do the remake and make it about Instagram assholes who went to the Superbloom.
Jim Caviezel was in a remake in like 2008, and it's terrible. Do not watch that.
Wait.
That's not what I'm telling you to watch.
Okay. Long Weekend.
Long Weekend.
What year did it?
It's like 74 or
okay.
something like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I gotta check it out.
It's so good.
Good deal. Drea?
Can I first tell you my dead kangaroo story?
Oh, no.
No, it's quick.
Okay,
I went to Australia last year, and I saw 5 dead roadkill kangaroo and not a single live kangaroo. That's my dead kangaroo story, you guys.
Yikes. Uplifting.
Casey, can you cut that out of the episode?
No. Leave it in. I want people to know my truth.
Maybe they were playing dead. Maybe that was their defense against people
downer.
Just showing
no,
up.
There's
and...
an even more bummer detail that I'm not going to tell you because April right. She won't have it.
I won't be able to handle it.
No, she won't. She won't at all. So my staff pick, but I'm going to thread in that I had a kangaroo story, so you can't take it out. So my staff pick is a film called Band-Aid, which is new on Netflix. It's starring and directed by Zoe Lister-Jones, and then Adam Pally is in it.
Oh, yeah,
and
it was last year, right?
Yeah, it's,
it, yeah, I reviewed that.
Yeah, it played Sundance in, I think, 2017. But I find it's a really interesting relationship story. It's about this couple that's arguing all the time, and they sort of cross. They're just swearing at each other too. It's just these very like, they're at a disconnect. It's not working, and they take this weird turn where they decide, what if we take all of this anger and communication problems and make songs with it? And they start a band with the two of them, and they're fueling sort of songs based on this. And I think it's really interesting. I find both of them charming. Zoe Lister-Jones. People would recognize from all sorts of TV stuff. She's in a show now with the word pieces in it, and I don't remember anything else about it. My bad.
Pieces of...
A Million Little Pieces?
Ooh, maybe.
Pieces of Life?
Pieces,
I was just
something
looking
like
up
that.
Her, reading about her today,
yeah.
Actually, weirdly.
So, and she was on New Girl. She's been on a bunch of stuff, but I really liked... I think it's interesting. I think it has something nice to say about relationships. Yeah. And also what I love is, so that was the first film that she directed, and she's now attached. She's directing the remake of The Craft that's coming up. Oh. And so there's, if you're interested too in sort of director trajectory and how they're choosing projects and what they're drawn to, I'm always interested in what people's follow-ups are to their indie babies.
And if I recall correctly, Band-Aid like had an entirely female crew.
Yeah. They had like an 80%. We showed it at Bentonville as well. Yeah.
Adam Pally is a person that I tend to enjoy.
Oh, like, yeah. Huge Happy Endings
fan. I feel like when I look at him, I'm like, oh, I should, like, you're like kind of a bro. Maybe I won't like what you're doing.
Yeah, but he's so funny.
Really kind of thoughtful comic timing, and I just really appreciate him when he shows up.
Band-Aid.
I love that we have a guest named Kevin, because now I can do my Ann Dowd on The Leftovers impersonation.
Oh my
Kevin.
God.
Kevin.
I don't know if that was specific enough. That was amazing.
It took me a second because it's been a minute. But yeah.
I didn't watch The Leftovers.
I wanted to do
that really good
thing. Kevin! That's when she forgot the mom. I know, but
You gotta lean back and just let fly.
Or like Tilda Swinton saying Kevin and we need to talk about Kevin.
There's
just
so
basically
many good
like, Kevin.
Lucky you.
That's what Tilda
Kevin. Kevin.
Oh, boy. Well, so mine is, I went back as well. It's 1981's Zorro the Gay Blade.
Oh, love it.
He just swooned.
It is one of my favorite movies of all time. And I've seen it a number. I may have actually broken the record. Zorro the Gay Blade is basically about it. George Hamilton plays Zorro, but he takes on the sort of mantle of Zorro after the original Zorro, his father, has passed away. But in doing so, he's still sort of new to the game. He sprains his ankle. Zorro sprains his ankle, and. The father has died, so his estranged brother has also shown his twin brothers. They were separated at some point, and the twins have been living in the UK. And he shows up to pay his respects. And basically, first guy, Don Diego, says, his brother is Bunny Wigglesworth, right? Yeah. And he says, listen, man. This Zorro thing, it's really popping. I brought it back, but I can't do the stuff, my ankle. So you're going to have to take up the mantle. And so this guy, he says, all right, I'll do it, but I'm going to do it my way. And he becomes Zorro in all these different, like, colors. And he's, you know, the traditional Zorro, obviously black. He's showing up in mauve and peach and avocado. Everything. He's got tassels on. He doesn't use a sword. He uses a whip. And he's just tearing up the town. And it's one of my... Lauren Hutton's in it. Yep. And Brenda Vaccaro is hilarious. the guy who plays the Accaldi is...
Ron Liebman.
Yes. That dude is amazing.
Yeah.
It's everyone's really funny in this movie. And it's just this gay Zorro running around town in 1981. And what blows my mind about this movie is this idea... I don't know, maybe now you could, but even just like a handful of years ago, I don't know if you could have sold this. I think it would have been weird. I think, so here, say, it's Zorro, but he's gay. What? I don't understand. Why would we? And I think in 1981, they just went recklessly like, I know, what if he's a gay guy from England? All right, let's shoot it. Yeah, George Hamilton?
It was the early 80s.
Yeah. But it's a really funny movie. It's one of my favorites. And yeah.
Two bits, 4 bits, 6 bits a peso.
Listen.
All for Zorro's stand up and say so.
Oh my God.
Look, you guys, I have with movies, I'm sorry, I was going to let it go. I didn't want to keep, but I have what I call my Han Solo moments in movies. That moment gives me chills.
Oh my God.
At the end of Star Wars, we all know Luke's going down the trench. He's about to get his ass blasted by Darth Vader. He's got to shoot the thing in the little hole.
Yeah.
And no metaphors there, I guess. And, and Han Solo, who was taken off before, shows up. And helps him from out of nowhere, and Luke does the whole thing. That's such a great, even now, think about it, it gives me chills. And that a similar thing happens at the end of that, and it yes. as a I remember watching this and just being like, "Yay, both of the Zorros!" Now. Like it was so exciting, and that little two bits.
I saw this movie when it came out with two of my sisters, and we were in a nearly empty theater. And we were laughing so hard that everybody else in the theater was laughing at us laughing so hard. Because part of it is George Hamilton's Spanish accent, which is ridiculous. Well, yeah. You know, where he's talking about, like, the ship oil. It's so cartoony and ludicrous. It's sort of the next chapter of his, like, goofy Eastern European accent from Love at First Bite. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, Zorro the Gay Blade. Yeah, bless you. I love
it. It was on TV. I don't know where I found this movie. But I would just watch it all the time on TV.
It was an HBO staple, I think, for a while.
There you go.
Nice. Yeah.
I want to mention real quick, if you haven't seen Julia Hart's Fast Color and it's still showing near you, run out and see it. I have no idea if it is still showing near you because it's getting such a crap hazard release that maybe it's already gone from theaters. I don't even know. But look for it. But my pick actually kind of dovetails, interestingly, with Zorro the Gay Blade. One of the movies that I wrote about in my Christmas book and have written about in other places because it is one of the most bananas gay films ever made has never been released on home video, but it's on Amazon Prime now.
They have the best trash. I love
them
right
now. They have
the
nuttiest selections.
Why? Is it Amazon?
Is it Savannah Smiles?
You'd think, but no. A 1971 feature called Some of My Best Friends Are, and it is literally an AIP movie, like the Roger Corman.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah. And it was like...
I know this movie.
It's like the AIP version of The Boys in the Band, basically.
Ooh.
It is set in a gay bar on Christmas Eve, and it's like
it was made for you.
It is the most like self-loathing film. Everybody is so depressed as having such a shitty life and hates being gay so much. And then it has this amazing cast of future TV stars. So like the hunky airline pilot is Gil Gerard of Buck Rogers in the 24th Century. The wisecracking hat check girl is Fanny Flagg. The evil trade hustler who beats up Candy Darling is played by Gary Sandy of WKRP in Cincinnati. And the capper of all, the monstrous Gorgon fag hag of the movie who calls a gay guy's mother and she shows up at the bar and confronts him and is, you know, like horrified that her son is gay, is played by Rue McClanahan.
What?
Wow.
You have never seen this movie and you need to see this movie. It's bananas.
I passed this when I was scrolling for things. I saw that title.
Some of My Best Friends Are.
We'll no longer pass it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
It will change everything. Next week, we are talking about, it's all been leading to this, Avengers Endgame with our very special guest, Ricky Carmona. This will be the last Ricky Carmona hosted episode. Man, so you don't want to miss that.
He doesn't want any outpourings of emotion.
Oh, doesn't he?
Tough shit.
Does he not?
I'll show up and just look in this window and cry. Like face pressed against it.
It's going to be This Is Your Life up in this piece, so I don't care if he wants that or not.
Wow.
But hey, that does give you a whole week to write some lovely 5-star reviews for this show, which we can read or he can read when he's here. This week, we have one from Josie Makes It, who writes, as a disabled queer trans woman and movie lover, I have been overjoyed every week to hear this diverse panel talk about film with their unique perspectives and knowledge. But I gotta ask, bam, who shot ya? Was it the talented and charming Ricky Carmona, who was the enthusiastic host until mysteriously skipping town? Was it the jolly Alonzo Duraldi, driven mad as I am by the death of 90s radical queer cinema and always looking for more red to deck the halls? Was it the bloodthirsty April Wolfe, whose taste in film I often share and love of cats I always share? Could it have been Drea Clark, the dope rhyme saya, because you got in her way-a? Was it one of the great guests? Nah, it was Ingu Kang. Ingu shot you. I'm still a fan, though. I hope she's back on the pod soon. Oh, bam!
We also hope Ingu's back, too, soon.
Indeed.
And she will be. Ingu's coming back.
Invariably. So
I like
you.
That she wrote a whole story in her review.
I know. She really did. She took us on a journey there. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Josie. And thank you, Kevin.
Thank you, guys.
This has been a delight. Where can people find you online?
I'm Kevin Avery, at Kevin Avery on Twitter, at Kevin Avery Comedy on Instagram.
All right.
Yeah, and you watch New Negroes every Friday night at, I want to say 11, but as I found out this past week for the premiere, 11 was not the case on the West Coast. We showed up for a viewing party at 10:45, and one of the other writers, she was hosting it, and she opened the door like, we already missed it. Like, no one in the house had seen it. They had all gotten there.
It had come
on at 8 here. So I don't know what to tell you guys.
Check your local
ComedyCentral.com.
Yeah. So, and my episode will be on May 7th. I'm on two episodes. May 17th, I'm doing stand-up. May 24th, I appear in a little something, doing a little musical something with Method Man. So,
nice.
I don't do any music. But I'm in the video.
Did he spit on you? I went to a Wu-Tang show and he spit so much it like hit the audience.
No,
as he was rapping.
Oh, because he was. No.
He was just so into it.
He was just expectorating.
I have seen that. I should have let into that better.
Did he spit on you?
No.
Yeah.
Yes. He was really abusive.
Drea the Moist, thank you for being here.
Gross. No, don't make that a thing.
Wow, what?
Casey, take that out.
She's being spit on.
Is that like
it's not a thing?
No, it's not a thing.
It's like you're a knight. Lady Drea the Moist,
she
defender of the realm.
She brought up being spit upon, so I just, did.
That,
sorry,
that
I don't
part
know.
Was wow. On me.
Okay.
Make it stick.
No! You can take out my Jake Kangaroo story if you take that out.
If you think that's not sticking, that rock is rolling down the hill, my friend.
T-shirts are being made right now as we speak. April, thank you for being here.
Thanks.
Got a
April the bloodthirsty.
There you go. Got a comment or suggestion about this week's show? Tweet at us at WhoShotYouPod. Our Facebook group is at facebook.com/groups/WhoShotYouPodcast, or send us an email at WhoShotYou@MaximumFun.org. The Who Shot line again is at WSY8031664. Thank you again to Eve from Alameda. Our producer is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. This is a production of MaximumFun.org.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.